You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. The horse knows a way to carry the sleigh.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 016 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show here on 740thefan.com and KFGO.com. I'm Daniel Pinto Gunnarsson. My co-host Brad Jones is not in studio. The White Shadow, however, is in. Well, Brad, why don't you tell the people where you're in right now?
Yeah, right now I am in Huron, South Dakota. I am in the guest room at my grandma's house recording the podcast today.
Does Grandma White Shadow make an appearance today? That is the question.
You know, I asked. I made that. I extended the offer, and she politely declined.
Grandma White Shadow. Oh.
Yeah.
Did you get some home-cooked food, though? That's another question. So when you visit Grandma, the home-cooked food has to happen.
Literally, I mowed through supper right before we recorded the podcast.
What was
it? Before you called me. We had burgers and some homemade tomato dumpling soup.
Whoa.
As well as an apple salad. And as soon as you hit stop on the podcast, there's homemade peach pie waiting for me.
Oh, my goodness. I'm really jealous of you right now, because today I've had some mac and cheese today. I had some homemade chili. And, I did get a nap in, too, so that was my day. But,
okay.
But, no, God, that sounds amazing, peach pie. But,
oh.
Brad, let's get to our usual thing. If you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm at PintoKFGO. Brad Jones is?
I'm at The Bison Guy.
And you can follow us on Facebook. You can send us an email, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com, and we'll respond to that. Also, if you go to the KFGO.com page, up on the top, there's a bar that says news, local media, and on air. In that media, there's a drop-down bar. Go to the blogs page, and then in that blogs page, you're going to see the featured blog section. And in that featured blog section, the Pinto and White Shadow Show. Again, of course, this is the 016 podcast. Last week, we talked a little bit NBA, and the reason I bring that up is because we did have somebody respond to us in the comments section on KFGO.com. Marcus from Mayville, that's what we're going to start calling him, Marcus Hagnis, who resides in Mayville, North Dakota. Marcus from Mayville wants to talk a little bit about NBA because he wants to disagree with our Eastern Conference take. So we're going to try to get to the Western Conference and the NBA a little bit later in this show as well, so we'll bring that up for Marcus in Mayville. But in the meantime, I think we just need to get in it. Brad's got peach pie waiting for him, so we'll try to hammer this thing out as quickly as possible for him so he can get onto that and talking with Grandma White Shadow. So without any further ado, let's go to
local.
And, of course, Brad, we start out with NDSU's big victory over Southern Illinois, a 31-10 win. You look at the record of Southern Illinois, you look at the record of NDSU, and going in and me saying big really makes it seem like I'm trying to pump it up to be a much larger game than it was. But talk about your feelings headed into this game, Brad. Were you a little bit nervous about the Salukis?
I mean, you're always a little bit nervous about them. That 3-4 defense that Dale Lennon runs always has given the Bison a little bit of trouble in the past. And, you know, they're, again, we talked about this a little bit last week. They're coming off of a huge just wave of between emotions and expectations and how close some of the games have been. I mean, they're coming off just a wave of different things over the course of the past month, month and a half. And then you go into a place that's tough to play against a coach that knows the program as well as Dale Lennon does. And, you know, yeah, I mean, that was one of the games that you had a little bit of, I don't know if concern's the right word, but you knew that it was, in theory, going to be a pretty tough game, and it was for about a half.
Yeah, that third quarter came around for NDSU, and they were trailing 10-7, and it looked for the most part that you're going, oh, okay, SIU's come to play a little bit. And then the third quarter happened, and NDSU's rush game took over. Now, John Crockett ends up with all the touchdowns in that half. But before the third quarter, I want to go back to that touchdown right before halftime there, that big touchdown to Zach Vrah. The reason I want to bring it up is because I talked about Zach Vrah, the kind of difference he makes on offense, because he makes everything that much better. He makes the underneath routes that much easier to complete because you're worried about the deep threat. He makes the defense a little softer on the play action because you actually have a guy who can go deep. And then he brings this to the table. You're in hope and in desperation need of something positive offensively. There really wasn't a lot going positive for the offense or Brock Jensen. How big was that Zach Vrah 55-yard touchdown in your mind?
Well, I mean, it was huge to get a little momentum and get on the scoreboard in the first half. But I thought, and honestly, one of the things that I was most impressed with, it was a great catch, but, you know, Brock Jensen does not throw the ball very well on the run. And he was moving. He did not have his feet set, and he heaved that ball down the field and put it in a place where his guy could make a play. So, honestly, I was pretty impressed with the throw just because, you know, Jensen can throw the deep ball when he's got his feet set, but when he moves around, he struggles a little bit. So that was good to see. But, no, you mentioned it, and I was, frankly, a little skeptical of whether or not Brock could be that guy coming into the year, if he could be that deep threat person. And over the last few games especially, he's really shown the ability to get down the field and be able to stretch things out a little bit for NDSU. So, yeah, I mean, it was a huge spot in the game, and the Bison really needed that shot in the arm. And then, yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, like I said, it was big. It really was.
Defensively, they did what they're supposed to do. I mean, there's nobody that's going to be able to rush against NDSU. I'm not even sure why you try at this point. Looking at the stats, SIU ran for 89 total yards, but they lost 43 yards. And then I looked at the sacks. Four sacks is a pretty good number. But then you look at the tackles for losses. Christian Dudzik had two tackles for a loss. Grant Olson and Colton Heagle combined for a tackle for a loss apiece. Esley Thornton's in there. Mike Hardy is in there. The backup defensive end, Brian Schatz, is in there. This team defensively just keeps getting better and better and better.
Yeah, I thought Dudzik and Heagle had amazing games. Oh, yeah. They were, both of those two guys were everywhere. I mean, in the middle of every play, it seemed like, you know, even you saw them more often than even you saw Grant Olson in these games. And I don't know, I haven't seen the stats. I don't know what the tackle numbers show, but it seemed like Dudzik and Heagle were just everywhere.
Dudzik had 9 tackles. Heagle had 7. How much has Christian Dudzik really progressed as a safety in your mind from this year to last year? Because to me, I feel like he's just gotten so much better that it's scary how good that those two safeties are now playing with each other, Dudzik and Heagle.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Dudzik starting out as a corner, there was a little bit of an adjustment period that was going to be with that. And Dudzik, frankly, looked a fair amount like Heagle in that.
Oh, yeah, he really did, yeah.
He just tackles so well, and that's just across the board with this Bison team. I mean, they just, if they get their hands on you, you just aren't going to break a lot of tackles. And Dudzik's really embraced that and has, you know, cornerback a lot of times is seen as a little bit more of a finesse position, whereas safety, you got to be a little bit harder of a hitter. And, man, he's made that transition pretty well this year.
Looking at some other stats, 504 yards of total offense. And passing-wise, it was what it was. They had 200 yards rushing in one quarter, which was...
That drive one where they started, was it 94 yards?
Yeah, the 94-yard drive, yeah.
That was, I mean...
Video game-esque is what I tweeted out.
I saw that. I did see that. Yeah, and you just sat there like, huh, boy, I don't know if I could do that as Alabama playing against the FCS on one of the NCAA football games. I mean, it was just, you know, it was just a complete and utter, you know, jury for 40-some yards. And then Jensen with a couple. I mean, it just that quickly. Usually you have a big pass play that ignites a drive like that. And to just run it like that. That's just so demoralizing for a defense.
Looking at the time possession of the third quarter, here is the breakdown of this quarter, because this is what I thought was really pretty amazing. NDSU ran the ball or had, let's see, I'm looking at plays. They ran 23 plays in that quarter alone compared to 6 plays, or it looks like maybe 12 plays for SIU. Guess how many of those plays in the third quarter were runs?
Out of 27, you said?
23 for 23. NDSU.
I'm going to say 19.
Yeah, wow. Spot on. Exactly. Ooh. 19 rushes for 205 yards. 10 minutes and 14 seconds time possession. You're talking about that 93-yard drive that started out on their own 7. They had a 40-yard rush, an 8-yard rush. Then they had... Well, there was a penalty on the 8-yard rush, so you push it back 2 yards. Then a 17-yard rush, a 12-yard rush, 26-yard rush for a touchdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, that video game-like. That drive, when you think about this game and you think about the way NDSU kind of went into this game, that is your right there. That is the blueprint of this game, was that we're going to run and we're going to run it down your throats, especially the second half.
And it just seems without fail, the Bison just wear teams down. And then they have that drive, but then they just keep coming. And it's just, it's 4, it's 7, it's 12, it's 6, it's 5. I mean, they just keep coming. And by the third, end of the third, into the fourth quarter, I mean, teams just, they just get wore down. And this Bison offense just does not stop hitting.
Well, the time of possession for NDSU wasn't great as far as being in the advantage. In fact, they were outplayed in the first half like we talked about. But it's that second half. They held on to the ball in the third quarter for 10 minutes, held on to the ball in the fourth quarter for 10 minutes and 29 seconds. Time possession in their favor, 30-33. That's a stat that I think NDSU has really become, you know, you win the time possession. That's always something you look for. Another thing you look for is third down conversions. NDSU was really bad in the first half, and in fact, for the game, 2 of 11. So they struggled on third down conversions, but again, it's all about the fact that they weren't really having a lot of third downs to deal with in that second half because they were running, like you said, 5 here, 8 there, 4 there, 20 there. That was pretty unbelievable in my mind. The other thought I had, and I'm going to have to bring this up, and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to bring it up to Coach Bull, or at least put it in a way that makes sense for him to answer on Monday. This team, and I'm going to say emotional, even though that kind of puts it in the wrong light for the listener, but the emotions of the team when they're out there, when things start to not go their way for the first half, because I think of the way this team responds in the second half, I think of Kansas State, I think of mainly most of that South Dakota State game because it was 7-0 for a lot of that game. Northern Iowa being down 13 going into the fourth quarter. And in this game, the first half, you're in Carbondale, you're down 10-7 with a team you've struggled with before. What I'd like to know is what is the emotions of the players on the sidelines and what people notice? Because to me, I just don't think they falter. And I don't know if you noticed that.
Say, you said emotional. I'd almost go emotionless.
Yeah.
I mean, they just don't. They just, their demeanor doesn't change a lot. They just go out and handle their business. They, you know, they trust the process. They trust what they do, and that even if what they do, the results aren't coming right away, if they keep doing it, the results will be there. And they just, they don't get overly emotional about it, and they just handle their business.
Yeah, it's been pretty... I'm watching Saturday, and I'm just shaking my head at what they're doing in the third quarter, but that's just, I don't know why it surprises me, frankly. I don't know why what NDSU has done for the last 2+ years now surprises me, but I think because you look around the landscape of college football, and it is so tough to find a team, even year in and year out, that for 13 games, they just dominate, and they go out and they stick with their identity, they don't panic, and they end up being the best team at the end of the game and at the end of the season. Alabama is the team that you can think of that's closest to that. But really, NDSU, you never think of them going out, well, they're going to have to throw 35 passes this game, or, oh boy, they're down 15 at halftime, or they're down 10 at halftime. They're going to completely have to change things going into the half. They've just been able to run the ball and run it so effectively. And it's just so surprising because they've done the same thing so long that teams are... they got to know that this is coming. It's the guard pulling to the right. It's the guard pulling to the left. It's going to be this. It's going to be that. I mean, you could simplify NDSU's playbook into 5 plays and just go, we're going to run it right out you, and teams have not been able to stop it.
Yeah, but and you know, Brent Vegan is really good at what he does because he's got just enough wrinkles with it to where if you start over pursuing, they're going to play action, they're going to sneak the fullback out along the backside. We haven't seen that as much this year,
right?
But that playbook has been a staple in their playbook since the Steve Walker days. You know, and they'll run those jet sweeps around. They'll run some bubble screens. They'll run that little middle screen with one of the running backs. So they've got just enough wrinkles in there to be able to, you know, to be able to keep teams from being able to overcommit one way or another. And then, and not only that, but sometimes, you know what, it just doesn't matter. You can know what the team's going to do, but if your offensive guard is blocking not only the D tackle or the D ends, but it's also pushing that guy back into the linebacker.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you saw a lot of runs with Southern Illinois yesterday where there was some linebackers who were either getting to the hole too early or the angle was wrong, the pursuit of angle was wrong. And I always thought, well, why is it? But it must be the fact that you've got linemen coming at him. It's not like it's a free, you can't really see what's coming at you because your linemen, the defensive linemen, are being blocked into the linebackers, and then the linebackers have to adjust to that, you know.
And if you look at the games over the years, or even, you know, over the course of this year, as it gets to the fourth quarter, that point of contact where the, you know, that line just throughout the game just pushes back and pushes back. We're right away in the game. The first contact, the first time that one of the running backs is having to make a move is at the line of scrimmage. Well, by the third quarter, it's 2 yards down the field.
Right.
And by the fourth quarter, it's 4 or 5 yards before he's even having to make a move.
Yeah.
And that just makes all the difference.
And the other thing, too, when you're an NDSU team and you're able to hold an offense that beat South Dakota State and beat Northern Iowa, too. Well, South Dakota State, and we'll get to them in a minute, not really a good defensive team. We're finding that out. But Northern Iowa is supposed to be a better than average defensive team. And you have a Southern Illinois team that's been passing for 200-plus yards the last couple games come in, and you're just able to shut them down and make them one-dimensional without your starting linebacker, without your two freshman backup linebackers. I mean, they were so thin going into this game. That was a worry. The depth of this team is unbelievable defensively, and it starts at the offensive line or defensive line. And so it just all around, and again, like I said, I don't know why it surprises me, but it still does sometimes with this team. So NDSU, 31-10 victory in this. Before we get to next week's game for them, I want to go around the Missouri Valley Conference, because what is up with the Missouri Valley this weekend? There was a lot of games that were head-scratchers. There was a lot of games that you went, boy, what is going on here? The Illinois State over Indiana State, 55-14, not so much. Youngstown State, I looked at these stats. Youngstown State, in fact, as I look at the standings, Brad, is still the only undefeated team in the conference. They are tied right now with NDSU atop the conference at 3-0, 6-1 overall. They've won four straight. They beat Western Illinois 24-14, but they didn't really beat them that badly. It was a close game. In fact, when you look at the stats, Western Illinois won in a lot of key parts of the game. They won, I think, time of possession was one of the things Western Illinois won in, and first downs. Youngstown State just ended up with more points, which is really all that matters. Those two games, they are what they are. We'll worry about them later. What I want to talk about first is let's get to the Missouri State-South Dakota State game. Were you surprised at Missouri State coming out with a 35-21 victory over the Jackrabbits?
I mean, if you'd have asked me to pick it ahead of time, I probably wouldn't pick it, but I mean, if you have the blueprint, and I guess I shouldn't say blueprint because I think that's kind of a dumb term, but but if you're going to beat South Dakota State, you sell out to stop the run and try to make Sumner beat you. I mean, that's what you do. If they can't get Zenner going, we've seen that they're going to struggle. They just will. And I don't know why more teams. You know, and again, if it's just the scheme, if it's just other teams don't have the horses to be able to do it, but it's not going to surprise me when any team is so one-dimensional, it's not going to surprise me when that team loses. It just isn't.
You know, you say one-dimensional, and they had Zenner run 30 times for 138 yards and a score. I look at these stats, so they just can't stop anybody, and that's becoming obvious. Here's Ryan Heaston, Cooper Falls, and Ashton Glass, who started this game instead of Kiara Harris. They combined for 352 yards rushing. These three guys had 122 for Heaston, 104 yards for Cooper Falls, and then Glasser had 84 yards. Three rushing touchdowns. We're averaging 7.5 yards a carry rushing. It's just not good defensively. That's really pretty ugly, especially when it's 5 yards, 7 yards, so it makes it really easy offensively for Missouri State to kind of pick and choose what they want to do.
And frankly, that's kind of strange for a South Dakota State team. I mean, they've always been pretty stout defensively, and especially defensively against the run. I mean, that's always been one of the things with both NDSU and SDSU. They made the transition. It's like, well, the defense is gonna be there, and that's been just very, very strange to see those kind of numbers being putting up on SDSU.
And SDSU had a shot. They put themselves in the position to get right back in the game. It was 27-21. They had just scored a touchdown. All they needed was a stop. And then Glasser, a 69-yard run for a touchdown. And that's what ended up being the dagger in the game really late in the fourth quarter. And so South Dakota State at this point, as we look at the standings, a team that had come in, they looked really dominant. They looked like a team that, they're going to make some noise. Right now, South Dakota State is behind their rival South Dakota in the conference standings. South Dakota State's 1-2. Granted, they've played some tough competition. But now for them, you know, the defense is an issue. And they've given up 188 points so far this year. There's only two defenses worse when it comes to giving up points, you know, points per game in the Missouri Valley. One is Illinois State. They've given up 242. And then the worst team in the Valley, Indiana State, has given up 190. You know, South Dakota State, we all have this idea that they're going to make the playoffs.
Okay, let's hold that. Let's get to the next game and let's come back.
Okay. Well, hang on to that comment because I want to talk about that. The next game, which is even more surprising, pitted Northern Iowa against the University of South Dakota. And ladies and gentlemen, the Yotes, probably the biggest win since they've been a Valley member. A 38-30. I don't think it is the biggest win as a Missouri Valley team in conference. A 38-31 win in double overtime against Northern Iowa in Northern Iowa. Brad, your thoughts?
I mean, it was, you know, I saw the results. I was like, no, come on, really? Good for USD. That is surprising. And maybe, you know, was it something where we overrated Northern Iowa, where maybe they weren't quite as far back as what we initially thought? Or what exactly is happening? Or is it something with the injuries, especially after the NDSU game? I mean, did some of that catch up to them? I don't know what it is, but man, that was, I mean, an incredibly surprising result. And like you said, a huge win for USD.
Yeah, 38-35, or I believe is what the score was. 38-31. Yeah, pardon me. Both traded field goals in the first overtime and then a touchdown for South Dakota. I think that you spoke about it is the injuries, and the one player that I think about is Jack Farley. And him breaking his leg, and you think, well, it's one player, but again, A, coach's son. B, he's your middle linebacker, so quarterback of the defense. And see, he's really good. You can't understate that at all. I would venture a guess to say that if NDSU were to lose Grant Olsen for the season, their defense would struggle. I don't know if it would struggle as mightily as you and I has, but it would struggle.
It would be noticeable.
I think it would be noticeable. I think it would be noticeable to the point where you're giving up 38 points to the University of South Dakota? And you're up here. Here's a really unfortunate thing for you and I. They're up 28-7, and they're halfway, almost to the end of the third quarter. They're up three touchdowns at home. That's game over. It should be game over at this point. And then USD rallies from that far down and scores 21 unanswered points. Last touchdown coming with 5 seconds to go in the game.
And having comebacks like that happen against you in back to back weeks, man, that's hard to get over.
Yeah, and I believe they're coming off a bye, too, because they're only 0-2 in the conference, which would mean to me they didn't play last week. And so you're coming off a bye. Maybe it was a little bit of some relaxation going, okay, all right, we're good here. We're you and I, we're where we're supposed to be. And then all of a sudden it's going, what's going on here? Kevin Earl is a name I want all and everybody to remember. This guy had all 5 touchdowns for USD. 3 through the air, 370 yards passing, and then he had 2 rushing touchdowns as well. Riley Donovan was his main target, 9 catches, 178 yards, and 2 touchdowns. USD ran up 510 yards of total offense against the Panthers. There's just numbers you don't tend to see. The other thing, too, I'm seeing here, Brad, is 3 turnovers for you and I. Sawyer Colmorgan threw 3 picks. You read into it, David Johnson had 181 yards. In the end, you and I, now when they're at a point with 15 minutes to go in the fourth quarter knocking off the number one team in the nation, they've fallen very far and are at 0-2. Again, let's get into that playoff discussion.
Okay, so here's the question I have for you.
All right.
North Dakota State making the playoffs. How many other Missouri Valley teams make the playoffs?
At this point, if Youngstown State continues to play well and win games, and they, I think, wouldn't, if they go in at the end of the season only have one conference loss, and that conference loss be to, say, NDSU, I think they get in.
Okay, so you think Youngstown gets in?
I have Youngstown in, looking at the standings.
So we got, what, 3 other probably candidates right now? I don't know.
On name recognition alone, in my mind.
You got UNI, SDSU, and probably USD.
You think USD?
Maybe Southern Illinois.
I think more so Southern Illinois.
Okay.
I don't know what USD has done. I'm looking at their schedule here. South Dakota has beaten. Yeah, they beat you and I at home. Oh, where are you? Of course. Oh, there they are. South Dakota, right above South Dakota State. They have losses at Western Illinois, which isn't good.
Okay.
Loss at Kansas. You forgive them for that. And then they lost at a ranked Northern Arizona team. USD, you know, they still have some decent games coming ahead for them. So
I mean, the NDSU game is going to be huge for them.
Yeah. Can they pull out a win? They also have a home game against Youngstown State on November 2nd, as I look ahead kind of the schedule here. Next week, they're at Illinois State. If they start winning games that they should win, that's the question to me for USD.
Well, I think the question is, can they win one of those games that they're not supposed to win?
Well, they already have.
But they've got two more that they're not supposed to win.
Right.
They've lost three games. They've got Youngstown and NDSU yet. So
and South Dakota State at some point.
Okay, so they've got to win one of those two, one of the NDSU or Youngstown games. They have to have one of those.
Okay, and I would say, I have to agree with you.
Anyway, we're kind of getting sidetracked.
Right, here. It doesn't matter here.
So, okay, so you've got NDSU and Youngstown.
Yes.
Any other Valley teams in?
Southern Illinois has the best outside shot to me because of their victories on the road against you and I in South Dakota State. But then again, what happens if South Dakota State and you and I just completely tank? Those wins don't look as good as they did right away. So, again, Southern Illinois really could have done themselves a big favor by beating NDSU this weekend. If you roll off those three kind of victories in a row, you're pretty much going, all right, we have a shot at the playoffs, or we're pretty much in the playoffs.
Okay, so you still haven't answered my question.
I'm going to go ahead and say no. I don't think they do make
it. Okay, so you think two Missouri Valley teams is all that makes the playoffs?
At this point, with the way these teams are beating each other up, yeah, two.
Wow. That would be an upset. If only two Missouri Valley teams make it, that would be an upset.
Here's the other question that we have to remember. Not question, but here's the other fact we have to remember. It's an expanded playoff this year.
Yep.
So saying two, we may be really short-sighted with that, or nearsighted, doesn't matter, same thing. You have to remember, Northern Iowa does have an FBS victory under their belt,
I think there's three teams that make it. I don't know who that third team is going to be yet, but I think there will be three Missouri Valley teams that get in.
Let me throw these three teams out at you that are on the cusp and tell me which one do you think would make it out of these three, Southern Illinois, Northern Iowa, or South Dakota State.
Of those three teams
right now, who's in the leader position to make the playoffs?
I'd probably agree with you. I'd probably say Southern Illinois.
Okay.
I don't feel great about it. It's Southern Illinois or Northern Iowa to me.
Right.
Because it's hard to get over the fact that a team that was ranked number four in the country 2 weeks ago is all of a sudden not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think that's especially as you mentioned in an expanded playoffs.
And again, you look back when NDSU, the first year they kind of expanded the playoffs, NDSU loses the last game of the season to a very bad, well, not bad Missouri State team. That's not fair to them. But a game they should have won on the road. And they still made the playoffs at 7-4. They had that Kansas win under their belt.
Yep.
That is the reason they made the playoffs. That, to me, is why right now, as we look at it, Southern Illinois has the lead. But as the season goes along, I think Northern Iowa has the best shot. Yeah. If they can put some wins together. I mean, it's...
Oh, don't sit here and qualify it. Yeah, if all the teams put the wins together, they can. Then they're going to make the playoffs. Congratulations. Dynamite analysis. Which team's going to do it? That's what we want to know, Gunderson.
Yeah. Well, then, if I was to take a bet, the best team right now with the shot, if we talked about it today, Southern Illinois, but the team that will do it, if we need a third team, if we're picking a third team, the team that will do it is Northern Iowa.
Okay, there we go. Man, that took me a long time to get an answer.
Well, you know.
Holy smoke.
I gotta dance around the question a little bit. I can't just get into it right away. That wouldn't be fair to the people that listen to the Pinto and podcast, Pinto and White Shadow show. I can't just be like, here's my answer, let's move on. I need to fill with nothing for a while. That's what I need to do. So it'll be fun. Those kind of games make it interesting, where USD upsets Northern Iowa, and you're going, oh, okay, now where are we at with Northern Iowa? That's what makes it interesting. That's what's a lot of fun. I don't think next week's going to be too much fun for Indiana State.
No.
This game is shaping up to be pretty brutal in my eyes. What are we looking for here as NDSU fans? When we sit down to watch this game, and we'll probably watch for the first half, and I could be selling Indiana State short, but I really don't think I am. What are we looking for in this game? It's an obvious game that NDSU is going to win because Indiana State is really bad this year. What are you looking for as a fan?
There's only one thing to look for. No injuries. That's it. I know we've been harping on that quite a bit on this podcast this season, but you want no injuries, especially no injuries to your linebacker core.
Right.
Because it's starting to get thin, and we talked about preseason. What could happen to this team that's going to derail their chances at a third straight? And it wasn't so much one injury. It was a multiple of injuries to the same position.
Yeah. And yes,
we're getting real close to towing that line with the linebackers. So that's it. You want people to stay healthy, and especially you want to make sure that your linebackers come out of it unscathed so you can get into the bye week and get some rest.
Here's the other thing that I'm going to look for, because the injuries are part of it, but I'm going to look for the defense and see if they can put back-to-back good games together. And not that that's been a problem for them at all.
Well,
but
the definition of good game has
drastically changed because it seems that fans now game to game have these high expectations. I'm talking solid. Because I look at Indiana State's stats, and offensively, they're pretty good. There's no doubt about it. In fact, they're the best passing offense, which is kind of intriguing. But they're the best passing offense in the Missouri Valley this year. So, to me, a good game defensively is what they did. They had, I think I saw 10 or 8 quarterback hurries against Southern Illinois, a team that has now all of a sudden gone to more of the pass. So, I'm looking for the front four to put some pressure on. I'm not looking for a shutout. I'm not looking to hold them under a certain amount of yardage. But at the end of the day, I want to go, boy, they dominated up front. Because I started to feel that with the front four and really the first seven for the NDSU defense, is that they started to dominate as the game went on. And that's what I'm looking for this team, because Indiana State offensively is good. This game, I say 3-touchdown win by NDSU. Is that too little or too much, Brad? What do you think?
If you're setting the over-under at plus, at 21, I'm taking the over.
Yeah. This game, I think, is going to be, it's going to be that. Another question I had here is, we talked about injuries. Do you think some of the starters get early rest because of the bye week? And I know it all depends on score, but the reason I ask is because the bye week is next week for NDSU, which I talked about it in my Pinto's Points blog on KFGO.com. You can go out and check that out. But the advantage of only having an 11-game season is really starting to shine here for NDSU.
To get to your question, I don't think that the bye week is going to make any difference there. Craig Bull has been very, very consistent over the years with what he does as far as pulling players due to a blowout, and pretty much the number is 35. Once his guys are up 35, then you start to see some people come out of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the number. It just is. I don't think he changes that number just because they're going to a bye next week.
Right. And the team needs the rest. I think of the University of South Dakota, a team that you said they need to make some wins. At this point, they have a huge opportunity coming up November 9th. They actually play the University of Montana. They have a 12-game schedule. But to me, it makes sense to do a 12-game schedule if you're a team like the University of South Dakota.
If you've got something to prove.
Yes, the University of South Dakota. Another team that I thought of was Illinois State, or Indiana State, pardon me, this year has a 7-game road schedule, 5 home games. You know, you don't fill the stadium enough. You need some way to make money. But then you start looking at, boy, there's injuries. We could really use a break here. So that's what it is. I got to get this out. This is via Dom Izzo and then via Todd Hefferman of down in Southern Illinois. Hefferman covers the Southern Illinois Salukis. Looking on Twitter right now, and I'll give credit to those guys because they broke this, but reports are starting quarterback Corey Faulkner has a broken index finger on his right hand, maybe done for the year.
Oof.
Yes, and we had a conversation about what teams sit right now to be the best to get into the playoffs. That's a huge injury.
Yeah, oh,
I mean, that's there's no doubt. That's bigger. That's bigger than Mark. That's bigger than Jake Farley injury for you and I. I mean, if he's done for the year, he's the quarterback. He's been the offense for this team. Southern Illinois now. Let's see how they regroup. I mean, that's the question. We'll see how they regroup. And he did leave the NDSU game prior, I think, halfway through the third quarter, I want to say, if I remember right, because Faulkner did not finish the NDSU game. So
correct.
That's big news out of Carbondale. But, yeah, so a lot of things happening in the Missouri Valley. I think NDSU, we're not on upset alert or anything like that. They've got a bye. And then they end the season with 2 out of 3 home games. I know Youngstown State's in there. I don't have the schedule in front of me right now. Youngstown State, USD, and looking to Illinois State are the last 3 teams. And so NDSU's got a pretty favorable schedule. The Youngstown State game now, on the road, mind you, is already looking like it's going to be the Missouri Valley title game, essentially, if Youngstown State doesn't stumble.
Yep.
So we'll move on.
Even if they do once, they'd win the head-to-head. So.
Right, yeah. So I think NDSU would be okay. I think that wraps it up for regional, or at least local, I should say, because next week we won't deal with the top 25 in the FCS. There really wasn't anything big. I know McNeese State, I got it right this time, boys. McNeese State beat Sam Houston State.
Yeah.
It's a big win for them. There's no doubt about it. The Cowboys getting that victory. But we've seen Sam Houston State last year. I think they lost to Central Arkansas, I want to say. And Central Arkansas ended up getting into the playoffs, based pretty much off that win. I think they did really good in the Southland as well, weren't bad. Yeah. But we see Sam Houston State stumble from time to time, and it still doesn't.
McNeese State's a top 10 team.
Well, yeah. And it's surprising in the way because of what McNeese State did against Northern Iowa, you know, where they only put up 9 points and then they're able to come away with the victory for that. Quickly here before we move on to regional, the Sports Network, which is kind of like, it's the FCS is kind of where you go for information. They put out their playoff projections week by week. They put them out on Sundays. And this week's playoff projection had this. This means nothing. And it really only works for talk radio or a podcast. But their first round has Montana State at, or Northern Iowa at Montana State for a first round game. The winner of that would go to Fargo.
Ooh.
That is their projection.
Wow.
I'll say this. Expect me and expect this kind of onion-like article to be written about if this game were to happen coming out on the Pintos Points blog this week. I've already thought about something onion-like satire type of article that might be coming out about this game. Because that game, the North Dakota State-Montana State matchup, and I was talking about this. I ran into some guys last night downtown. They wanted to talk football. I said, the only team that scares me is Montana State. The reason being, not because they may be overly talented or anything like that, but the reason being is that I think if you're looking for a team to get too jacked up for a game and you're looking for a fan base to get too jacked up for a game, Montana State would be it. Because you know that's in them, going, we want to beat them, and we want to beat them so badly, and we want to beat them in Fargo because they bailed on us, and they ran away. And that's how I'd look at it anyways. Maybe I'm out of line. What do you think?
I mean, see Georgia Southern last year.
Yeah, but I think that's different. They wanted NDSU. To me, it's different because Montana State didn't want to play NDSU. They didn't want to lose that game. Yes, Georgia Southern did bail on a matchup, but then they got another opportunity to come back and beat NDSU. I would say 2011 was more of the kind of game that you could look at to be similar if NDSU and Montana State played in the playoffs. Not so much 2012.
There was a whole lot of noise around Georgia Southern last year when they bought out of that game. And I don't remember which patsy that NDSU ended up having to add to the schedule late. But when Georgia Southern finally did, there was a lot of noise around that in that semifinal game. I think it'd maybe be a little bit amplified just because Montana's a little more local or regional. So I can see that. But that would be a real tough second round matchup, just like we thought SDSU would be last year.
Right. And the other part of it, too, is that NDSU struggles with running quarterbacks, and Denarius McGee is a definition of a scrambling rushing quarterback. He can play both running and passing. NDSU struggles with that. But again, this is what is today. It's October 20th. This first round game wouldn't take place till November 30th. So a lot of things could happen between now and then. Northern Iowa might not even be in the playoffs. Just food for thought.
Okay.
This guy, whoever put, I think it's, Craig Haley, puts him together for the Sports Network. He has Eastern Illinois as the number two right now.
Okay.
But he only has three Missouri Valley teams in.
Okay.
And South Dakota State's not one of them.
Okay. Yep.
Youngstown State would be the other. So just that kind of thought as well. So we'll move on from that. We'll move away from the FCS talk, and we'll get into
regional.
And the only question I have regarding the Minnesota Vikings is starting Josh Freeman. What is this a sign of? in your mind?
I mean, it was expected. You knew that it was going to be coming. You can't go back to Ponder.
No.
Ponder's done. I don't know what
forever as a Vikings quarterback
is.
Forever.
As far as they're not going to go into next season, even if Freeman's just completely terrible, they can't go into next season saying, well, Freeman was bad, so Christian Ponder, you're our guy, you're our starting quarterback, you're our future. Christian Ponder is done being the Vikings starter.
Okay, so question was, Vikings forever, you think he'll be a backup?
If he's with Minnesota next year, yes, it's in a backup role.
Okay. I think he's done forever. I think this kind of signifies the end because, in my mind, this isn't going to make the Vikings 9 wins better, this move to Freeman. But I think it will. This is the hope, at least, if you're a Vikings fan. It will make it obvious that we have our quarterback in place.
Either way, you want an answer. You don't want Freeman to play okay. You want him to either want him to stink up the joint or you want him to play great, because you don't want to have to go into the offseason with that question of, well, do you think we should sign him? I don't know. I guess he was all right. Or do we go to the draft? You want a clear-cut answer one way or another.
Play good, play bad, let's figure it out. Don't give us this kind of middle of the row where we can stay there. And again, if he does play bad or at least somewhat bad, I guess, you could go, well, he could be a good backup quarterback. Let's go out and draft somebody and then get rid of Ponder. If his attitude changes...
I'm saying, yes. If that happens, if he's bad, they go to the draft.
Right.
And they basically flush the whole system as far as quarterbacks go.
Another question is that this wasn't supposed to happen until after the Monday night game, and the Vikings don't play till tomorrow. They play the New York Giants in what is being billed as the worst Monday night game in the history of Monday night games.
look good on paper like 3 months ago.
Oh, yeah, it did. Now it just looks bad. Is Frazier feeling the heat with this move, putting Freeman in the starting quarterback position already?
I think that was, and we talked about this too. I told you that I thought he had to. I think that was a directive from on high that we are signing Josh Freeman for $3 million. You are going to play him within the next X amount of weeks.
Okay.
I don't know if it was fully Frazier's decision. If he made the decision, but I think that was the expectation. Whether he was involved with the decision-making process as far as whether or not to sign Freeman, I don't know. But once Freeman was signed for $3 million, he was going to play.
To me, this is what it means to me. It means that the Vikings have no idea, or at least they're trying to put out there that they have no idea what the real problem is, and this is going to kind of smooth things over, because again, and I've said it since probably week three, it's not Ponder, it's not Castle, and it's not going to be Freeman that makes this team better. It's going to be the defense.
Yeah, the defense needs to be better for sure. But you this is something you've been saying since week three as well. You keep talking like these things are mutually exclusive. Like, oh nope, the quarterback position is fine. It's the defense that's bad.
But
no, they're both bad. That's the problem. That's why this team is 1-5, 1-6, whatever they are.
1-5, I think, is
what
they are. Doesn't matter. But the problem I have with that is that for the first 3 weeks, Ponder wasn't absolutely horrible. He had given him, he had put him in position to win two of the first three games. The defense screwed up. If you go back and you look at today's game between the Bears and the Redskins, and the Bears have no problems with their quarterback. Well, they might now if Cutler is actually injured. But you look at McNown, who came in and threw for 204 yards and a touchdown.
I think, and by the way, I think it's McCown, not McNown.
Whatever. I hate names. McCown.
McNown was drafted by the Bears back in the day.
I'm probably going to put a montage together of me mispronouncing every single name.
And you're
possibly
just going to run
can,
that as like an hour-long podcast?
Yep.
Because,
that's pretty much it. That's what it fills up. Anyways, do Bears fans go, boy, it's his fault that we lost 45-41 today? Or do they go, our defense stunk? Our quarterback put us in a good position, but our defense stunk. I mean, they look at it in a way that how Viking fans should have looked at it. They should look at it and go, Ponder put us in a position to win. He didn't do it through amazing stats, and he wasn't throwing for 300 yards, but at the end of the game, he put us in a position to win. Our defense didn't come through. Down with Ponder. It's Ponder's fault we lost. No, it's not. It's your defense. Start going after Jared Allen. What's his deal? Start going after the defensive line. Why can't they stop anybody? Start going after the secondary. I mean, what's going on with there? And it's only going to get worse because Harrison Smith is out for the year, essentially.
I think you're looking too small picture for this. Because for a Vikings fan, speaking from a Vikings fan perspective, whatever, winning these regular season games, winning 9-10 games, getting a wild card, winning a game in the playoffs, you know what? Big whoop. We've been there, done that. We're kind of over that at this point. It's not a one game to one game thing. It's big picture. And the type of defense that you have in order to be able to win a Super Bowl with a guy like Christian Ponder as your quarterback is not something that you find very often. You find that, once every 10 years or so, is there a defense that's good enough to be able to carry a quarterback like that? It's much easier to get a quarterback that is at least above league average, that's a better quarterback than it is to find a defense that's so good that it can overcome the shortcomings of your quarterback. They need to upgrade both, but it's not as if Ponder is not part of the problem. When you're looking at a big picture, our goal is to win a Super Bowl. Our goal is not to win week two of the regular season.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I think that deserves a...
Oh, my! He's on fire!
Yeah, that was a good argument right there. You've sold me on that. I never really thought of it in that light, essentially.
How
because,
have you not been thinking of it in
because
that
I'm
light?
Not, I'm
because
not
I've
a,
been yelling at this.
Well, I'm not a
Viking.
Here's the reason. I'm not a Viking fan, A. And B, my quarterback, Tony Romo, has been the reason the Cowboys have lost, essentially, from most people's standpoint, since he's been the quarterback. And I would go... Would you want somebody else to be your quarterback?
Well,
I mean,
say,
what's
we'll
the
take
question?
It off your hands. Vikings.
Yes, exactly.
We'll take him.
Right, exactly.
You can have the poo-poo platter that we have right now. Give us some Romo.
That's exactly why I get angry when people want to blame the quarterback for everything. And I go, that's not the issue here. Now, if the Vikings, that's why I kind of get upset. But good argument. Very well put. Let's move on from that because the Freeman thing is really the only thing we could discuss about it because they don't play till Monday. NFC North, I'll throw the scores out at you. I'll let you respond. Redskins, Bears, 45-41 Redskins win. Bengals over the Lions, 27-24. And then the Packers, not surprisingly, 31-13 over the Browns. Here's a nugget I'll take from each of these games, and I'll let you kind of argue with it. Bears defense, really, boy, that was interesting. Is they're no longer the defense that we kind of equate with the Bears. And now, not only is the Bear defense looking really bad, but it looks like RG3 is back.
Oh, I love these proclamations after one game. RG3's been struggling for 4, 5, 6 games.
He played very
one game, and he's back.
He played very. He played.
Give me a couple more games.
Here. He played like himself against Dallas. He was running the ball. He was able to run with some confidence, and that was the first time that you actually saw him start to run with some confidence this season. I think he's starting. I think he is back to where he needs to be in order to be the type of quarterback he was last year. He's really trying to figure it out, or he's gotten confident again in that knee. That's what I take from it. Okay, you can have another game if you want, but that's what I take from it. Also, the defense is really bad. Bengals, Lions. No one could stop Calvin Johnson. That's obvious. But yes.
I think should have happened in that game? I think they should have made both Calvin Johnson and AJ Green play both ways.
Oh boy, that'd have been fun.
I want to see them on each other for the entire game. I think there should be a vote on things like that because it would just be fun.
Bigger win for Cincinnati or is it a bigger loss for Detroit?
Oh gosh, you're going with the around the horn question right there. I think it's a bigger loss for Detroit just because I think that their division is a little bit more topsy-turvy, or there's less room for error in the NFC North than what there is with the Bengals in their division. I think the Bengals have a little bit more wiggle room because they've got, you know, Cleveland's not great, Pittsburgh's down, Baltimore's down. I think they've got a little bit more room to have a game where they don't play as well, whereas the Lions just don't have that room.
I think at this point with that win for the Bengals, they have a 3-game window now. Yeah. On anybody close, which is pretty big considering.
That's exactly. So if they lost the game and they don't, you know, and they drop down a game, whatever.
Yeah, they'd still have a 2-game.
They're still in good shape.
Oh,
they're still in good shape.
I agree with you. I think it's a bigger loss for Detroit because you're at home. Right now, Green Bay is 4-2. Now you're tied with Chicago, and you don't know what's going to happen with this Freeman thing. Again, the Vikings, for all the worries they've been having, they won 10 games last year with essentially the same roster they have this year. Things change in the NFL. We haven't reached the halfway point yet. You don't want to start losing home games and going, oh boy, where are we going to end up? You got to, you know, that's, again, bigger loss for them. Anything, the biggest thing that came for me from this Packers-Browns game was the injuries. It looked like Jermichael Finley, took a big shot towards the end of the game, had to be taken off on a stretcher. The Packers... How thin can you get at receiver before Aaron Rodgers just throws up his hands and says give up? Or is he good enough to survive with the paper machete type of wide receiver core?
Paper machete?
Yeah, stuck so together with glue.
A paper sword?
Machete. What?
No.
Yeah, no, not
machete. Machete is the movie that Danny Trejo is in.
Yes, that's right.
It'd be paper mache.
Mache.
Oh my gosh. I mean, here's the thing. Remember 3, 4, 5 weeks ago when you were panicking about the Packers?
Paper sword. Yeah, I do.
Okay. I'm just making sure that you remember that when I told you they're going to be fine, they're going to win the division, and then we put a wager up on it.
Oh, boy.
Okay. I'm just wanting to make sure that we remember this.
We should move on. We'll move on to
National
and the Packers. We'll get away from that. Elsewhere around the NFL, anything noticeable to you? Chiefs came up there, now 7-0. Win against Houston, 49ers.
What happened with that Cowboys Eagles game? 17-3 was the final there. What happened with the Eagles offense? Holy smokes!
Matt Barkley, USC's very own, came in and threw 3 interceptions in the matter of I don't know how many series, and the Cowboys. Offense wasn't prolific. In fact, it was 3-0 at halftime. Bad game, but here's, again, Cowboys fans, take this and run with it. This defense has nobody on it. No DeMarcus Ware. They let go of Jay Ratliff. This team is beat up, and they give up 3 points to the Eagles. Not only that, now the Cowboys are 4-3. They've beaten every single team in the NFC East, Giants, Redskins, and now Eagles. And, you know, the rest of the way, it's going to start to get a little bit easier for Dallas. They lost to the 2 unbeaten teams, and that's acceptable. You can hang on to that one. And then they were disappointing against San Diego defensively. And you look at those back-to-back games, and they've really turned a corner. They're at Detroit next week. They have Minnesota after that, at New Orleans, then the bye. It's after that bye, you want to be able to still survive. You need to win 2 out of the next 3 because Detroit, New Orleans, scary if you're Dallas. Just because your passing defense isn't amazing. It's bad, actually. But you want to be able to go into that bye. Now you're comfortable with the fact you've beaten every single divisional team. That's a plus. And now you can go into that bye going, hey, we still have that advantage over them. And the back half of the schedule is a little bit easier. You have a tough stretch in December against Chicago, Washington, and Green Bay. but the back half of the schedule is a little bit easier. So it is what it is. 17-3, I'll take it. Victory's a victory. Chiefs, as we look around, I kind of went off. How about the Jets-Patriots game? We got to talk Jets-Patriots. The overtime win for the Jets came because of some obscure rule that was put into the playbook, or playbook, put into the rule book this offseason. As a fan, do you feel cheated, or do you feel the refs made the right call by calling an obscure rule correctly?
I mean, the rule is the rule. If it's obscure, I don't know that both are mutually exclusive. Yeah, you can feel a little bit cheated, but if the rule's there, I mean, as an official, you got to call it.
Did you watch that?
I was really trying to talk about it without dodging, because no, I was on the road.
Okay.
So I saw was Bill Simmons really, really angrily tweeting.
Oh boy.
That's what I saw.
It's not so much the play in question, because I saw the play and it was called correctly. The guy spun around, got behind his defender, and tried to push him into the line. That's the rule. You can't push a guy into the offensive line on a field goal attempt.
Okay, yeah.
It's something of that nature, but they put it in this year. But it was the look on the faces of Tom Brady and the guy who was called for the penalty. It was like somebody had just told him that, hey, you're going to prom with the hottest girl at school. No, you're not. You're really not. No, you're not.
You're actually going to school with Dan.
Yeah, exactly. That it was so unbelievably comical. Everybody looking around going, what? You know, because you look at the play and you're thinking, oh, did he hit somebody? Did he do something stupid? But in the end, it was something he didn't even know he did wrong. So it was interesting. That one, they're going to be talking about that for the remainder of this week. And that'll come up when those two teams play again. Niners, 5-2, they're looking fine. Carolina won again, and they won big, 30-15, over a Rams team that was kind of on the brink there, where you're thinking, hey, maybe they'll get something together. Panthers, if they weren't in a division that was actually really good with the Saints and then the underachieving Falcons, who are now 2-4, I might be saying, hey, you know, they have the blueprint to start winning. I think this is going to, you know, go right into my next question: is the top three NFL coaches on the hot seat? Is Ron Rivera still there for you?
Oh, you know, again, I'm not much of an overreactor. I think I'm sticking with my guns there. Shiano is still atop my list, as I'm assuming he is yours.
Yes. Yep.
Man, you know, it's always interesting when those teams, I think probably the number two spot right now for me belongs to Gary Kubiak.
Ooh. Okay. I'm going to give you that, because he hasn't done anything with Houston, and there's some high expectations for that team this year.
Yep, and that's the biggest thing. If you're bad, but everyone knows you're going to be bad coming in, okay, you can maybe deal with that, especially if it's your first or second year. You can maybe deal with that if the roster isn't there. But when the expectations have been there for about, 3 years now?
Yep.
And you've underachieved every year. You got a pass when Schaub got hurt, and you had T.J. Yates in the playoffs a couple of years ago. But I think Kubiak's got the number two spot for me.
Okay, I'm still at Tom Coughlin. But again, for our top three hot seat list, there's a lot that can change come Monday, because there's things in my mind that could change. But I'm gonna, right now as we record this on Sunday, Tom Coughlin's my number two still.
So okay, now let's wait here. If Tom Coughlin and the Giants beat the Vikings on Monday Night Football, are you putting Leslie Frazier on that list?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's why I have right now, I have Ron Rivera, and I have in parentheses, this could change depending on what happens Monday. And so right now the list is starting. There's a lot of candidates that are knocking on the door saying, hey, we want in. It also depends on if Leslie Frazier and the Vikings beat the Giants by, you know, say a couple touchdowns, then okay, that's, you know, Tom Coughlin gets, you know, stays solidified at number two. Or if the Giants come out and dominate the Vikings, you're going, oh boy, Frazier's
so
looking really hot.
So the loser of this game is on your list.
Yeah, I think so. I really do.
Okay.
And Kubiak at this point is at four, if there was a four, and Rivera's going to drop back to 5. But again, it depends on what happens Monday. And I.
But so right now you have both of those two on your list.
No, I have Rivera, but there's a lot of shuffling that could happen.
Okay, so Rivera's number 3, right?
Yeah, I think, okay. But Kubiak, like you said, to be number 2 on your list, that makes sense because the guy is the high expectations for
so that's the number one thing for getting, and that's why I'm hesitatingly, it's taken me a while to get there. I'm probably putting Coughlin at number 3 because the worst thing for a coach as far as being on the hot seat is high expectations and then completely laying an egg. And that's what Kubiak and that's what Coughlin have done so far.
So we'll review that next week when we talk that Sunday, and we'll see where the list is at because there's a lot of changes that could happen. Want to quickly get into these two topics before we get on to our NBA Western Conference preview and addressing the Marcus from Mayville comment on the KFGO.com podcast page. First off, NBA or Major League Baseball playoffs, World Series matchup, Cardinals-Boston. How bored are you with this? Who wins?
I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm bored with it. I've actually watched a fair amount of playoff baseball after watching virtually no baseball. I was actually visiting with my dad about that earlier today that, you know, we just haven't watched a lot of baseball this year. But the playoffs, there have been some fun games, and I've enjoyed watching some of the playoff baseball. And having watched absolutely zero baseball coming in, the St. Louis Cardinals were my pick on the podcast going into the playoffs and sticking with them.
Yeah, neither of us picked right for the World Series on the American League side because I think we both had Detroit, and that
Correct.
Didn't happen. I had the Dodgers, and they really laid an egg the other night when they lost 9-0 to the Cardinals on Friday night. But I'll say this. I don't know. I like Boston better because I think St. Louis is starting to get on my nerves.
You like Wow, okay. St. Louis is getting on your nerves,
yes.
But Boston isn't.
No, I like the Beards. I do. And I like David Ortiz.
Is that just because you wish you could grow one?
Yeah,
what?
That is part of it.
Okay.
In all honesty, I like Boston. I like the fact that this team really had a major turnaround after last season when they brought in Bob Valentine, and it really just was bad for them. And they
I love St. Louis. I can't stand. I've never liked the Red Sox.
Really. And see, no. I've always been partial to the Red Sox, probably because they were the lovable losers.
Stop it. They were never lovable.
What? Really?
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is happening now. This is a ongoing wager in locked. I have Boston, you have St. Louis.
Put it on the board.
Put it on the board, yeah. This is, now I got fun. Now I got interesting. I like this. Okay. the second thing, too. Clemson FSU, Florida State last night.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Holy cow in the way that Clemson just got boat raced out of their own building. It wasn't even close. Were you surprised?
Can't we just call this pulling a Clemson?
At this point, I think you have to.
I mean, they do that every year. It's these expectations. They climb in the top 10, top 5, and then they just get housed by somebody, and they're like, "Oh yeah, that's right. They're Clemson. They do this every year."
Yeah,
I think this is pulling the Clemson at this point.
And Florida State jumped from the BCS rankings. The first BCS rankings, in fact, came out tonight.
Is it exciting or sad that this is the last year that we get to say that?
Oh, it's exciting.
Okay,
I'm so happy.
I'm gonna miss it a little bit.
Not gonna miss it at all.
I'm gonna miss it a little bit.
Okay, so here are the standings as of right now. Ohio State was 3 and Oregon was 2 last week. They've dropped down 1. Florida State went from 5 to 2. And then the newcomer in the top 5, Missouri. Alabama's number 1. Everybody knows that. But Missouri in the SEC. When everybody was laughing at them and Texas A&M for making the jump, saying you're going to get throttled. Both those teams have put up in the last 2 years. Last year was Texas A&M with Johnny Manziel. This year it's Missouri. I'm very surprised. I don't think it'll last, but I'm surprised all the same. Stanford, Miami is 7. Stanford's 6. Baylor is 8. Clemson drops down to 9. And now Texas Tech, with a freshman walk-on quarterback, is 10th. So the FBS, which we don't pay a lot of attention to because, in all honesty, it just doesn't affect our region because the Gophers stink. Although they had a big win. They beat Northwestern. It's beginning to get interesting because the storylines are a lot of fun. And that's what I have to say about that. But I think pulling a Clemson, going back to the Clemson FSU thing, is where we have to go. Okay, Brad, the topic I know you've been waiting for.
I have.
Western Conference. Last week we previewed the Eastern Conference of the NBA. And in fact, I need to get back to where I was so I can read you a comment dropped off by one of our dedicated listeners.
Yeah, Marcus in Mayville.
Marcus in Mayville, who went to
he gets more airtime than I think either of us do.
Yeah,
which I don't know how that works.
It's quite possible.
It seems to happen.
Yeah, well, every once in a while, Marcus wrote, who respects the WWE theme to open the show, by the way, from last week. He disagrees with our top five in the East.
Okay.
He believes that the Heat are as his number three.
Oh, whatever.
Goes on to say, this whole Bosh, Wade, LeBron playing thing may work, but you know, last 3 years, three straight trips to the finals, one Olympic run. Wade's starting to show signs of wearing down. He sees them struggling because they've played so many games in the last few years. Here's his top five: Chicago, Indiana, Miami, Brooklyn, New York. That take of them playing so many games in the last few years due to the age, I like it. I'm going to respect it. I disagree with the fact that they're the third because they still have LeBron James.
It's reasonable.
But I respect that. I respect the argument.
It's reasonable, but I think that's going to change this year. And maybe, you know, if there's an argument to be made that that's the way that the regular season will finish, because I don't know that we're going to see LeBron playing 40, 42 minutes a game.
No.
I don't know that Spoelstra is going to do that this year.
Does he pull a Popovich? Does he pull a Popovich and rest him, or just not take him with on certain games?
Not quite to that extreme, no. But I think they do take a little bit that he takes the foot off of some of those minutes. I really do. So if Marcus and Mayville is referring to regular season finish, okay, I that wouldn't shock me if that's how the regular season finished up.
I'll get on board.
But
with
if you're talking most likely teams to go to the finals, then I have a problem with it.
Yeah, I think you might be talking regular season finish, okay. But again,
I can understand that.
I can get on board with it too.
Yeah,
I have no problem with that. I respect the take. Let's transfer in now to the NBA Western Conference preview. Brad,
yes,
your top five teams. And I'll make sure and take note of these as we go on.
Take note of these, okay? And I'm going to reserve the right, because I'll be honest with you, I'm on my phone. I don't have a computer, so there's a decent chance that I might forget somebody. Obvious.
Okay. Well.
But Oklahoma City.
Obviously, okay.
Is going to be up there. I think the Clippers are going to be up there.
Yep.
I still think San Antonio is going to be up there.
Okay.
So those are the three ones that jump out. And then you kind of get into some question marks. Golden State's a question mark.
All right.
Memphis is a question mark.
Yep.
Houston is a question mark.
Okay.
I think
Lakers?
Come on, stop it.
Lakers?
Stop it.
Lakers.
I think it's probably two of them.
Anyways,
continue. You really do entertain yourself sometimes.
I do, yes.
You? Yeah, okay. I think it's probably two of those three teams.
Okay.
What
about Denver?
No. Denver's tail spinning.
Okay.
I mean, they're, you know, Gallinari's out. One of your top three players might be JaVale McGee.
Okay, yeah,
all right. That's a problem. I think I would probably go Memphis number four and Golden State number reverse that. Let me go Golden State four, Memphis number five. I still have questions about Steph Curry's health.
Okay.
I hope he stays healthy, because that team is going to be one that is going to be so much fun to watch.
Yes.
Between him, Klay Thompson, Andre Iguodala, if David Lee's healthy, I mean, that team is going to be just a ton of fun to watch. So that's probably Houston. I think Houston's going to start off slow because it's going to take some figuring out.
Yeah.
But they're going to be a team that nobody wants to play in the playoffs.
No, I agree with you there. My top five, I'll give them to you. We don't venture much down a different path when it comes to the top two, OKC and the Clippers.
Okay.
It started to change a little bit. I love Golden State. I love what I saw from them last year, and I think
my only question is health.
And that is the question. But you have David Lee still, Andre Iguodala. You still have Curry. I like this team a lot. And Harrison Barnes. Shout out to UNC. This team is my third team.
Well, and Barnes is already hurt, I believe.
Oh, really?
I believe
but,
so.
It'd be a question about how serious he's hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, and not like a year-long thing or anything, but I'm pretty sure that I was reading that he's a little bit
banged up.
Yeah, yep.
Regardless, I have him as three. Houston is my fourth team.
Oh, interesting.
Because
explain yourself, oh, Dwight Howard hater.
Because I think they're going to figure out a way to make him relevant again, and I think the way they do that is by... And I was thinking about this on the way here because it's really tough because that's a team.
Here's the thing. The way to do it is have him do something that he doesn't want to do.
Yeah.
The way to do it is to have him run pick and rolls with James Harden, and he doesn't want to do that.
I know. But I think that's what's going to happen. Because
McHale's going to convince him.
Here's the question I have for you. Has Dwight Howard ever played on a team where he's had a guy good enough to run the pick and roll like James Harden and he could? No, he hasn't.
But again, he had Steve Nash last year. Granted, it wasn't a very overly healthy Steve Nash, but I mean, he's the best. Him and Stockton are maybe the best two pick and roll guys ever.
Here's the other part of that, though, is that if it's just Steve Nash and Dwight Howard, all right, cool. But you have Kobe, and Kobe takes up 50% of your possessions.
But that's
25 of them are one on one. But that takes away from what you want to do with the pick and roll. Steve Nash likes to play in a very flea.
But he didn't want to run it. But Howard didn't want to run the
pick and
roll. That's my point.
Well, the other part of it, too, is he's an egotistical maniac, and he thinks that he should be the star. And in Houston, in a way, he's going to be. So that's going to make him happy. So he's going to be – he's not really the star. It's Harden in my mind. But to him, they're going to say, oh, yeah, Dwight, you're the guy. You know, they may forget that – oh yeah, we should put Dwight on the cover of the program.
Oh, I get it. So now because he thinks he's the guy, that means he's less likely to be selfish.
No, but he's more likely to say, yeah, all right, I can do this as long as it makes me look better. That's how I feel about it. In LA, it didn't matter what you told him to do. He pouted and moaned because Kobe got all the glory.
I think he fancies himself a traditional back to the basket center. That's what he wants to do. He's never really wanted to run the pick and roll, and I don't see that changing.
I think it does. And I also think that Houston has enough good, well, not enough good. They have an outside.
They've got a fair amount of shooters.
The part of it that I was thinking too is putbacks. And that's where he can make his bread and butter.
You
get enough guys to start putting up shots. And then, of course, it all depends on health as well, which we can talk about forever, because Dwight Howard's got health issues. That's no question about that. If he's not healthy, I don't think this team finishes top six.
I love how we're arguing about this, and we have them one spot apart.
Right. Because you have them probably at
two spots.
Six.
I've got like five or six.
Yeah. And I have Memphis at five because that defense is unbelievable, and I love the interior game. I think San Antonio has a major drop-off this year. I think last year was their year. I do. And then
but
I think
the
this
thing.
Year is a drop-off.
We've been saying that for 4 years now, and they keep ending up in the top four of the conference. So I might be wrong this year, and this year may be the time that it finally happens, but I'm just going to keep picking them until it actually does happen.
All right. It's not a bad take.
Yeah, I mean.
Makes sense. Moving on to Western Conference MVP. Who do you have?
Durant.
Yeah, okay. Moving on, because that's me too. On to player that you expect to have a breakout or comeback year in the Western Conference.
The breakout,
you can say Dwight Howard. I'll give you that.
No, I don't. I don't think so. I'm not going to go Dwight because his comeback year, even last year, I mean, he still averaged, you know, like 18 and 12 last year. So how much better realistically number wise is he going to be? I don't see that much more going up. gosh, I kind of want to say Pau Gasol a little bit, but I don't think he's my guy either, just because I think he's going to be able to do a little bit more and have a little bit more space to show his skills this year than what he did last year. But, I mean, I think two of the guys that you look to for that, and my guess is one of the directions that you're going to go is on the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
You could go either for breakout, you could go Rubio. For comeback, you can go Love.
Yeah, either or. They're both in the conversation, I believe.
Yeah, who's your guy?
Oh, boy. You know, to me, a guy to have a breakout year, and I've just been reading a lot about him because I really got into Zach Lowe on Grantland.
Yep.
Over the offseason. And his calling of the Pellies, we'll give him a shout out. The New Orleans Pelicans.
Okay.
Is what they are. Anthony Davis.
You're going at Davis. Okay.
I really think that he's going to have a really good year. Not so much a breakout year. He was pretty good last year, but a year where you take notice of him and go,
yeah, because nobody tuned in to watch Anthony Davis last year.
No. I think he becomes a player that you tune in to watch.
Okay.
I think he starts to establish himself because he's got the make of a guy that could be electrifying. He's defensively pretty good, but offensively too, he's got a leaping ability, and if he develops that game back to the basket type of way, sure. The other part of it too is he's working with a really young team, and yes, you have to start out somewhere where you're going, oh boy, we're going to stink for a while, but then you build up through camaraderie and through really bad games, and the team on paper doesn't look that bad overall. Eric Gordon, Tyreke Evans, Drew Holiday.
Tyreke Evans, gosh, he's not a player I enjoy watching.
So you form something there with these guys. To me, I think he has a big year. And I think the Pellies, it just doesn't feel right. I think the Pelicans have a better year than most people would expect. I do.
Okay.
So
okay.
I have Anthony Davis. Did we get a direct answer from you, really?
I was really hoping you were gonna not notice that. I was just testing your hosting skills here. I'm gonna go Kevin Love.
Okay.
I feel kind of like I feel a little weaselly doing
you,
that.
You did
go
weasel.
Kevin Love.
That's all right.
Yeah.
We'll admit it. You weaseled out of it.
A little bit.
All right. Who's going to the NBA Finals from the Western Conference for you?
Gosh. Honestly, I have no idea. I do not. There are a number of different teams that could do it. And I mean, I think there's legitimately 4, 5, 6 teams that I could see in the finals.
I'm right there with you.
And, gosh, I really, really, really want to pick the Clippers.
Oh, I know. I'm feeling the same way.
I really do, but I just, I don't know if I can do it. I'm going to go with Oklahoma City.
Okay.
I think Westbrook comes back healthy, and I'm going to take Oklahoma City.
I can't go against them. I was going to say for the sake of argument, I was going to go with the Clippers, but I don't believe that. I think the team that has the best chance of knocking Oklahoma City off is Memphis because they're physically right there.
Yeah.
They're a team that
yeah.
can do that. But when it comes down to it, the reason that everybody loves – well, not everybody loves the Heat, but the reason the Heat are what they are is because they have a guy like LeBron James, who even in situations where he's not hitting his jump shots, he gets his points, and he dominates a game, and he's able to take over. He's unique. The Clippers have that in Chris Paul. We haven't had an opportunity to see how deep of a run Chris Paul and the Clippers can make, but we know what Oklahoma City can do, and we know what Kevin Durant can do. And if Westbrook does come back healthy, yes. Yes, OKC is the team to beat and will win the Western Conference. But again, the health is such a major concern for a guy like that who hurts his knee that brutally in the playoffs. So I have to go. I got to go OKC. I have to. I can't.
Yeah, we both have OKC Miami.
Yeah, and again, it sounds like we're taking the easy way out. We're not going out on a limb here, but yeah. Again, when you think about it, and it's just really tough to pick against OKC. So that is our Western Conference preview for the NBA. That is the end of the 016 podcast. We went well into overtime to cover a lot of this stuff. First ever in the history of the Pinto and White Show podcast, we did a phone
Yeah, typically I just phone it in when I'm in studio, but now I'm actually phoning
literally phoning it in. So, but it was good. It was fun. I had a great time. Again, if you want to comment on the show, go to KFGO.com, and we have a comment section under where we post the show at. If you want to leave us a comment on Twitter, you can absolutely do that. Brad and I, sometimes when the opportunity arises, we do weekly conversations via email. We'll do that from time to time. Comment on that. That'll go on KFGO.com on the Pinto's Points blog page. You can follow us on iTunes as well. Just go to the Pinto and White Shadow Show, type that into your search bar on iTunes, and it'll show up. 016 Podcast Monday. Make sure and download it and listen to it and enjoy it. Brad, where can we follow you on Twitter?
I am at the Bison Guy.
And I am at Pinto KFGO. So for Brad Jones, who's about to go eat some peach pie, and I'm extremely jealous about that, I'm Daniel Gunnarsson. Everybody have a wonderful rest of your day.